You're listening to a High Voltage Radio Network podcast. Find more at highvoltageradio.com.
This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome to the Kings of Sport, the program that's changing the game one show at a time, with your hosts, Nate Milton.
Yes! That boy's good!
And Marcus Vandenberg.
Let's say!
So sit back and relax, because you're now down with the Kings. And welcome to the Kings of Sport, the program that's changing the game one show at a time, a.k.a. the world's most dangerous sports show, a.k.a. iTunes' longest-running weekly episodic sports program produced and hosted by two or more African-Americans that are not affiliated with a major network. I'm your host, the Godfather Nate Milton, joined as always by my partner in crime, Marcus. I'm still buzzing from the Warriors after party, Vandenberg. What is going on, Brother Marcus?
What's up, Nate?
So, obviously we're going to talk about the big news of the week, that being the Warriors winning the NBA Finals. But we got a lot of stuff to get into this week. But before we get into that, man, I think the listeners want to know, how has your week been since we last spoke to you?
My week has been pretty uneventful. I'm trying to think what's been going on. Yeah, it's pretty low-key weekend. I didn't make it to the movies. I do want to see Jurassic World, but I didn't make it this past weekend. So, hopefully this week I can make it out there now with the finals and Stanley Cup being done with.
I don't think that movie's going anywhere, so you have a little while to catch it.
Made a lot of money. People like dinosaurs.
Yeah, I was actually surprised. I figured it would make a good deal of money, but I didn't.
But not like the most ever.
Right, because, you know, Jurassic Park, if you think about it, when's the last time it's been relevant? Like 10 years ago, maybe?
And even then, I mean, that was the third one, right?
Yeah.
The third one wasn't really, I mean, 93 was the original, and that's a different generation of people who have come up now. It's been 20-something years. So, it's impressive what it did. And I guess it wasn't awful from what I read, so.
I'll have to check that out. My nieces are in town for the summer, so occasionally I'll have the responsibility of finding activities. So the easiest way to go for me is movies, because we can stay in the air conditioning for a couple hours and they can be quiet and I can catch a nap.
Does this mean we'll have a niece on the podcast this summer?
You never know. That could very well happen. They are getting older and then more precocious, and even the youngest, she is starting to talk, and her first words are no, and I don't want to. So,
oh boy,
she's already,
what an American.
Yeah, she's already got the entitlement down. So,
how was your week?
My week's been pretty good, man. Just working. It's still ridiculously hot out here, but you know, it's been good. Not as busy with the podcast this week, so I've been able to catch some rest, much needed rest, and just enjoy the finals, and had a fun time. I guess it would have been Sunday night when my nieces came into town and we were watching game 5 of the finals, and that whole conversation of trying to explain not only basketball but the concept of the finals to, you know, 7-year-olds and 6-year-olds, and basically the story of, you know, why are they the Warriors? Why are they wearing blue and they're wearing white, but the other night they were wearing blue and they were wearing red?
That's easier than explaining wrestling, I think.
Yeah. So, yeah, given the choice between them coming on Sunday.
What's and the money in the bank?
Right. And having to explain Raw. Yeah, I think I'd much rather explain the NBA. Fortunately, though, they didn't come on that one game with LeBron.
That
would have been a talk to your mother situation.
Yeah.
Uncle Nate, what's going to talk to your mother? Because that was, yeah. I don't know what social media, I mean, obviously I know what social media saw in that moment, but that just took on a life of its own for a couple hours.
Bomani has a word for that, and it's meat peepers. And I don't know why meat peeping is such a trend, especially on the internet, but it's not the first penis we've seen in the world. It won't be the last one.
Yeah.
Move on.
That's a good way to tell the folks out there. And we're going to move on as well. Obviously, we've got some hockey to get into this week. We've got some great stories in segment four to talk about. And, of course, we're going to give you our extensive wrap-up of the NBA Finals. But Marcus and I were talking since we did the last episode. And, unfortunately, you know, the wrestling world lost one of its all-time greatest stars, and that is the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes, and he passed away Thursday night after
we Thursday, were Thursday morning.
The Thursday morning?
We recorded Wednesday, and then Thursday morning he passed. Yeah.
We Wednesday night we recorded with JTG, and then the following morning Dusty Rhodes passed. So we didn't, you know, obviously we went back in and added, you know, some Dusty Rhodes content to the show just to tip our cap to the greatness of the American Dream. But we figured, you know, we'd spend a couple minutes here off the top in the A block and just sharing our thoughts on the American Dream and our memories of Dusty Rhodes.
Yeah, and I think we have two different generations in the sense of wrestling, because my first real introduction to Dusty Rhodes would have been as a WCW announcer, not so much as the American Dream. I didn't watch wrestling until 93. So at that point, he had been through WWF, and he had, you know, obviously done NWA and WCW. But, you know, just watching, really, WCW worldwide at the barbershop and hearing Dusty and Tony Schiavone, and then going back, and of course, you know, eventually catching up on wrestling in the 80s and 90s, I became familiar with him, with Dusty, but that was my first introduction, was him as just this over-the-top, lispy announcer, who you knew even then that there was something unique about him and just about his style.
Yeah. Even when they put the all four hands on him, that's what you call a clubbering.
Yeah.
We gonna see who go to the pay window today, Schiavone.
605 on the
yeah. and I think, you know, my, as I mentioned on a Review and Impact this past week, my first kind of being aware of Dusty Rhodes was towards the latter part of his NWA run. So you're talking late 80s. And then, of course, the polka dot phase in the WWF at the time. And to me, it was all about how this dude just connected with the fans. And even, as you said, as an announcer, you know, there was something different about him that stood out. And you know, you talk about the Hard Times promo and some of the other great promos that he's had over the course of his career. It was always about you felt a connection to this guy. And, you know, him and Ric Flair made the best adversaries, because you got this one guy that's blue collar, and then you got this other guy that is the epitome of 80s Reagan era excess and white collar greed and all that good stuff. And they just played off of each other well. And even as Dusty got older, you know, into the WCW days as a commentator, doing stuff in front of the camera and behind the scenes with TNA, and then of course you know, working with NXT, you know, he still had that passion for the business. And you know, he's one of the rare few guys that nobody had a bad word about.
Yeah. And were you surprised by the, I guess, the national reaction when his death happened? Because, I mean, every now and then a wrestler, like, I think the last one was probably the Ultimate Warrior, who dies, who gets the mainstream attention. But were you surprised just sort of by, you know, the casual sports fan who, you know, posted something on Facebook who you normally wouldn't see post something on Facebook about wrestling?
Now, I think Dusty Rhodes, much like Randy Savage, much like Ultimate Warrior, is one of those names that's going to bring out the closeted wrestling fan. You know what I'm saying? Like, people that used to be into it and now are, you know, are either too quote unquote mature or too professional or whatever to acknowledge their fandom. But Dusty Rhodes is one of those guys that will immediately take you back to your childhood if you were a fan in that time. And so, yeah, you know, my mom mentioned it, and, you know, people at work are talking about Dusty Rhodes. You know, I think Friday, Saturday, even Sunday, they were talking about Dusty Rhodes. And it's because I think, again, he was somebody, I don't think he was ever as famous as a Macho Man to the mainstream people, and certainly not as famous as Hulk Hogan. But I do think that, especially in the South and the Southeast, you know, from, I'd say, from Virginia all the way down to Florida, like, he definitely was somebody that was in the, if not in the public eye, he was definitely somebody that was in the public consciousness.
Yeah, you mentioned the fame thing. Just imagine, I mean, to really become a transcendent superstar like that in wrestling, you need to really be on the WWF platform. And considering his WWF run was such a disaster with Sapphire, just imagine if he had, you know, half the shine that Savage had or Hogan had, combined that with his time in the South, what kind of legacy he would have. So that's why I was a little bit surprised, because, you know, you would have to, I mean, for the West Coast people who grew up in the 80s, we weren't really getting NWA on TV. Your wrestling knowledge came from the WWF days, and unfortunately, when Dusty got to the company, whether it was a Vince McMahon rib or just they didn't have anything for him, but the character he came up with for Dusty was mid-card at best, and on top of that, it was just so hokey, but Dusty made the best of it.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, if, first of all, it's just ridiculous to even say that sentence. Like, they didn't have anything for Dusty Rhodes. It's like, if you can't think of something for this guy, then it tells me either you're not trying or you're legitimately trying to, you know, either have a rib at this guy's expense or prevent him from being the best he could be. But like you said, he took the scraps that they gave him, and as bad as that character is on the page, that polka dot Dusty Rhodes is still probably one of the most memorable characters from that time period.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you can't knock the hustle. You can't knock, you know, his passion for the business. And again, a lot of people are saying now, maybe his biggest contribution was what he was doing down in NXT.
Yeah, I saw the Blue Meanie tweet something about he hopes that they rename the Performance Center after Dusty Rhodes. And I think that'd be a good way to tribute not only his life and legacy, but his involvement with NXT and the role he had played in the past couple of years with those young guys. And I know, I'm sure those guys were deeply impacted by what happened last week. I saw Kevin Owens, he wrote a whole thing after he died just about how he had been meaning to thank Dusty before his death and didn't get the chance to talk to him before he died, and just the role he's played since coming down to the developmental center. So hopefully the company will find a way to honor his legacy within the NXT brand.
Yeah, I think that'd be a great thing to do. And if you think about it, man, he's been one of the constants through that developmental system, I'd say, over the past 5-10 years, even before NXT down with Florida Championship Wrestling, he was a big part of that. So it's like a lot of those guys that are on the main roster now have come through that pipeline and have been under the tutelage of Dusty Rhodes. And yeah, guys like Kevin Owens, guys like, you know, Rollins and Ambrose and Reigns, and even people that aren't in the company anymore, like Michael Tarver, people like that are, you know, you saw the outpouring of appreciation for what Dusty Rhodes meant to them. And so, yeah, I think it's always a shame when you lose somebody like this in an industry, especially a guy that, you know, he wasn't even 70 yet. I think he was 69. And so he could have had years of knowledge and experience to pass on to the next generation of wrestlers, and not only wrestlers, but announcers and you know, writers and people of that nature. So it's a loss for the industry. But I guess if there's a silver lining, it's that we live in an era with YouTube and with the WWE Network. So if you're even younger than Marcus and myself and you're listening and you've heard all the glowing words about Dusty Rhodes over the past week or so, there's ample opportunity to go and see what made him so special, you know, at your fingertips right now.
What do you think is going to happen with Cody and Dustin?
That's a good question. I would love to see. Personally, I would love to see if this were the end of Stardust, because I think that was a character that worked for a time, and then it long has since, I think they lost grip of what the character was. So now, if you're going to make the change, I think now would be as good a time as any, because, you know, obviously the Rhodes family is something that's in today, as a matter of fact, was the funeral for Dusty Rhodes. So I think, you know, right now the Rhodes family is kind of in that public consciousness as much as they have been in a while. And so, yeah, I'd like to see Goldust get, you know, at least one more good match. And you think about it, about a year or so ago, maybe 2 years now, they were probably the best tag team in the company, and then they just couldn't think of things to do with them.
Yeah, I mean, I ideally would love to see the company rebrand the December pay-per-view as Starrcade, because that was a Dustyism, correct?
Yeah, yep.
And have Cody face Dustin in Dustin's final match as sort of a tribute to their father. And I mean, he's already been talking about retirement anyway, so I'm sure at this point now, wrestling is the last thing probably on both of their minds. But if he was ready to go anyways, then I would love to see them honor Dusty by, I mean, these pay-per-views mean nothing title-wise, but I think Starrcade still has some cachet. And, I mean, what's the December pay-per-view? Tables, ladders, and chairs? It's like, yeah, you know, you can change that to Starrcade, and it might actually get people who haven't watched wrestling just fool them into, hey, look, that name sounds familiar. Let me check that out. So, but yeah, that's the funeral was today in, I think, the Tampa area. And yep. I can't imagine what Cody and those guys are going through in terms of the family and just in terms of, you know, their future and what they would like to do in the industry. And I could definitely see Dustin taking a similar role to what Dusty did in the bat, sort of being that mentor to guys.
I think that'd be a nice thing for the company to do, and a nice position for Dustin as well, because, you know, he's someone that I think in his later years has probably figured things out from a mental standpoint in terms of the psychology and what it takes to truly be a professional that he might not have had in his younger years when he had some, you know, out of the ring problems. So I think his ring work has been fantastic the last couple of years, and it'd be nice to see him, you know, have job security within that company.
And if you haven't seen it, go back to the 1991 Royal Rumble. It was him and his father. Who was it, Jens? DiBiase?
Was that DiBiase and Virgil?
Yes. Yeah, and that's a young Goldust.
And that's ironic in and of itself, because Virgil was named as, after, in a rib, yeah, after Dusty Rhodes, whose real name was Virgil Runnels.
Yeah.
So, whole lot of layers of pettiness when it comes to Vince McMahon.
Real deep.
I'm going to name the lowest thing I can think of after you, a black man.
Who you aspire to be, some would say.
Yeah, that's another thing. Like, that's how good Dusty Rhodes was. You could argue that he took his whole gimmick and his way of his promo style from black folks, and black folks still loved him.
And on top of that, having an interracial managerial relationship like that in the late 80s, early 90s, that was pretty rare. And I wasn't around and wasn't watching, but I don't suspect many people complained or raised a ruckus to the point where they had to change it. But that was pretty, and whether that was Vince's call or Dusty's call or what, but just the fact that you saw that on television.
I don't remember anybody, of course I was a kid at the time, but I don't remember anybody really making a big deal about Sapphire being his manager. Like, it was just kind of accepted on face value.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that, I mean, she's only still a handful of black valets still. And not just wrestlers turned valets, but simply valets. She's on a short list, so.
Yeah, so, you know, again, this is our little tribute to Dusty Rhodes. And, again, if you want to learn more about him, there's millions of podcasts over the past week that have been put out. I know our friends over at the Fight Network and Live Audio Wrestling did a couple shows. doing paying homage, if you will, to Dusty Rhodes. You know, again, check out the network or YouTube and spend some time watching Dusty Rhodes this week, because you know he'll make you smile, because like we've been saying, he's one thing that you can always say about him was he knew how to connect to the audience, and that is a skill that never faded for him. So, Marcus, coming off of that, how do you want to make the awkward transition to hockey?
From the American dream to the Midwest dream.
Okay, that wasn't bad. That was not half bad. All right. There was a big event. You know, this is the theme of this show, I guess, would be champions being crowned. And the first champion to be crowned this week was the Chicago Blackhawks. And I think that, you know, we've been kind of slacking on our pimping the last couple of weeks when it comes to Marcus's Hockey Minute. So we're going to crank up the music for one last time this season and give the people Marcus's Hockey Minute, a.k.a. Ask a Hockey Negro. It's time for the segment that's cooler than a polar bear's toenails.
Here's the puck for Seth Jones. Leg one for Jones. Cutting it, but he scores! Seth Jones scores on the feed out of the left wing corner.
It's Marcus's Hockey Minute, a.k.a. Ask a Hockey Negro.
All right. You're going to learn today.
It's finally over, Nate. You've made it.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a long journey, and you know, I'm glad we're here at the end. But Marcus, you're not going to get my usual hockey cynicism this week, but because as a wise black man told the world this week, black people like hockey too.
If you haven't seen this interview yet, it's a WGN reporter interviewing Blackhawks fans on the street, and one of the fans who happened to walk down the street happened to be a black guy who got caught on camera and delivered that gem.
Yeah, I think we should play him for the people right now.
Yeah, just we'll play it.
If you haven't heard this great, it's only about 15 seconds. If you haven't heard this interview, take a listen real quick.
How about that? How you feeling today? You're live on the air.
You know how awesome the Hawks are?
They're pretty awesome.
They sound messed up, but it's true. They got black people loving hockey. Aren't they so?
All right. There you go. Couldn't put it any better than that. You enjoy yourself tonight, sir.
So there he's
like, you need to go back and watch him. Is that the reporter's face? I mean, he's so.
That's the favorite. That's my favorite part, because the reporter. Well, there's two things. One is the way that the brother just comes in, and you can tell he's been rehearsing this line all. As soon as they won, he's like, "I'm gonna find me a camera and get this line out there to the world." Because as soon as he delivered the line, he just exited stage,
walked off, dropped the mic.
Then the reporter just sitting there like he's got this combination of a puzzled look, but also a relieved look, because he's like, "Whoa, that could have gone a whole different way."
Yeah.
And then the cameraman is just laughing his ass off.
Yeah, so congrats to the Chicago Blackhawks, who won the third Stanley Cup now in 6 years by defeating the Tampa Bay Lightning in 6 games. I did get a tweet from our buddy Jermaine in Chicago, who, first of all, a little confident before game six, he was already predicting victory. But after the win, he raised a question about this being a dynasty. And, as I told him, I mean, it's not a true dynasty. I mean, what the Islanders did in the 80s, winning 4 in a row, that's a dynasty. What the Montreal Canadiens did back in the day.
The Patriots.
I mean, you gotta
Lakers,
go
Celtics.
2-3.
Like, those considered. Are the textbook dynasties, but I would consider this like a San Antonio Spurs dynasty.
Yeah, hockey is really tricky with their salary cap situation. I mean, it's hard to keep these teams intact. And the fact that they've done it now 3 times in 6 years, and the other 2 times went to the Kings, who faced a similar situation after their...
So the Kings won in the years that the Blackhawks didn't.
Which is crazy. The last 5 years have been Chicago, Los Angeles. some combination of teams out west winning the cup.
Apparently, according to the pattern, the Kings should win next year.
The Kings should win it next year, correct? Which would be 3-5 for them.
Oh, that'd be crazy. So,
yeah, it's not a true dynasty, but considering the rules that teams are playing by this year or playing by currently in terms of salary cap, yeah, this is very impressive what your title's done. And I believe I had that. I believe I picked the Blackhawks to win prior to the Stanley Cup. I got Montreal wrong, but I got Chicago winning.
I think the real question is, did you watch any of the games? Because last time we checked in with you on this particular topic, you hadn't watched any of the games, Marcus.
I did not watch game sets either.
So you watched a total of 5 minutes of the Stanley Cup?
Pretty much, yeah.
And you have the audacity to sit on this podcast and call yourself the Hockey Negro.
I spit knowledge, don't I?
I might have to see if we can get the random black man on the street from Chicago to come in and fill this role. Because at least he's been to the games.
Yeah, at least I did make it to some games this year, at least.
You went to the stadium series?
I went to Toronto to see a game. I saw a game in San Jose.
Because you saw Dan Fogarty?
Yeah. I did not make it to a game at Stapleton. I haven't been to a Kings home game in like 2 years now. But I've seen now the Kings on the road twice this past season, so maybe next year I'll make it out to Staples Center.
Is there any reason in particular you're not going to the home games, Marcus?
Oh, no, a lot of it had it mostly to do with work, working nights, and, you know, the nights I do have off, sometimes I don't want to deal with sports, so. But my schedule is a lot more flexible now that I have more day shifts, so. As I've been doing to more baseball games this year, because I've had more time off during the evening. So next year, I'll make it on more.
Yeah, we've been seeing a lot of Marcus Vanderburg out and about at the various, I guess I was going to say various baseball stadiums, but I guess the one baseball stadium.
No, I went to Angels last Friday. That's what I did last weekend. I went to the Angel game last Friday.
Oh, I thought both of them were Dodgers.
Oh, no, that was Angels Friday. And then I have a Dodger game on Thursday. And then, okay. I'll be in San Diego next week again. Or next week, I have a Padres game I'm going to next Friday. So,
okay.
Getting around. And then this summer, I'm going back to Toronto. So, I'm going to go to a Blue Jays game.
Okay.
But
you're not heading out to the All-Star game this year, are you?
To Cincy? No.
I was going to say, it'd be a great way to take in the Royals game.
Yeah, we got to talk baseball next week because I got a hot take on that.
We'll save that
for next week.
That is a whole nother topic. But this show is already jam packed. So that was Marcus's final hockey minute of the year. You know, it was pretty good, Marcus. But I don't know. If you truly fulfilled your obligations, watching 5 damn minutes of the Stanley Cup.
Well, I mean, as soon as I stopped doing hockey stuff at work, my interest sort of.
So this whole thing was your interest in hockey was directly congruent to your workload when it comes to hockey.
No, I wouldn't say that. I mean, well, selfishly, when your team is in the playoffs, you sort of like don't care as much. And then as the playoffs kept going and the team started dwindling, and then you're like, all right, well, I don't like Chicago, and I'm only rooting for Tampa Bay because the coach went to Hofstra. So my interests were starting to sway.
Yeah, when you're pulling out a collegiate
alumni card,
yeah, the alumni connection, like that's it's like 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon.
Yeah,
so that was the final hockey minute of the year. Overall, a popular segment with the people, but next week maybe we'll replace it with some baseball in the A block.
That works.
That'll be the new segment going forward. So you'll have that to look forward to.
No Fogarty though. No center field.
Yeah, we'll have to think of maybe that Simpsons song. You remember that one from the softball episode?
Yeah.
With Ken Griffey
Wasn't that a 4-3 ripoff song? Didn't they just rip it off?
Yeah, it was Talking Baseball, and they just turned it into Talking Softball.
That's our Talking Softball.
And that's still one of my favorite Simpsons episodes ever. And Daryl Strawberry is the only guy that still made it to the game. Daryl. So that's what you got to look forward to in next week and in the week to come. But this week, as we mentioned, we are going to show the Bay Area some love and pay homage to your new NBA champions, the Golden State Warriors. So coming up next in segment two, we're going to do a little I Got Five on it, NBA final style, if that's all right with you, Mark.
It works for me.
All right, stick and stay. More Kings of Sport right after this. It's a hood called Brookville, and all over the Bay, they all know about the 6'9 biz. Ride down MacArthur, don't get caught tricked, or you'll be sitting on bricks. My town is not big, you better believe it. If you slip, you're about to get ducked and smoked in a place called Oakland. Do you know about my city? The city of Oakland. How to be a Mac, a G, and not a wanna be. It wasn't about the body, just stacked up for the money you racked up, and when it came to standing your ground, you never backed up.
What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here? Another story to be told to the young bucks. The future hoodlums coming up. Show them the ropes these days. They pay the stomping fools who running up. Keeping in mind, whenever they out to grind, keep an eye on the academy number one. One time, cause they'll be making you get your bail on instead of getting your mail on. So skip the cash, but we got a dash, so we can stay. Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly from Ring of Honor Wrestling. Make sure you check out The Kevin Kelly Show each and every week, placetobenation.com. We'll be talking about wrestling in the past and wrestling today, plus be talking about all kinds of sports and pop culture, whatever's on your mind, too. We'll answer your questions each and every week. The Kevin Kelly Show, right here, placetobenation.com.
Welcome back to the world's most dangerous sports show. Now it's time for Questions with the Kings, a segment where your host will ask questions, make statements, but never ever assume. It's I Got Five on It on the Kings of Sport.
LeBron, Dave McMenamin, ESPN.com. We learned a little bit more about your, I guess, your training regimen throughout the course of these playoffs, and it's basically it's a two-month process you go through, both the mental and physical preparation. When you don't get the championship, is there any sense of, do you question whether it's all worth it, or can you just have satisfaction in the process?
Well, of course you question it. Especially when you get to this point. I always look at it, would I rather not make the playoffs or lose in the finals? I don't know. I've missed the playoffs twice. I lost in the finals four times. I'm almost starting to be like, oh, I'd rather not even make the playoffs than to lose in the finals. I would hurt a lot easier if I just didn't make the playoffs and I didn't have a shot at it.
Welcome back to the Kings of Sport, powered by Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com is your one-stop spot for the latest and greatest news, articles, opinions, and podcasts on the world of sports, pro wrestling, entertainment, music, comic books, whatever you're interested in. Place to Be Nation has an interesting take on it. Again, go to PlaceToBeNation.com for all of these great shows and articles. Place to Be Nation is down with the Kings. You guys are down with the Kings, so get down with PlaceToBeNation.com. And as we just heard in that clip, Marcus, a very, shall we say, somber King, LeBron James, moments after the Game 6 loss to the Golden State Warriors, which concluded this year's NBA Finals. And so I think there's been a lot of discussion about these finals, one of the most watched series. Maybe, was it the most watched finals of all time, Marcus?
Since
the Jordan years.
Jordan.
Okay, so, you know, obviously the public was interested in it, and I think that the listeners of this show were interested. So we're going to go through five questions, and give our breakdown, our wrap up of the finals, if you will. So, question one, if you are ready, Marcus Vandenberg.
I'm ready.
Number one, and I'll preface by saying no Mark Jackson questions, because I know that's a touchy subject.
Man down, hand down.
Mama, there goes that man. Question number one, what will you remember more from the 2015 NBA Finals, the Warriors winning the title, or LeBron James' performance in a losing effort?
Delly. No. I think the Warriors winning, you know, it's been 40 years since they've last won, and just from the start of the season to the very end, just the dominance Golden State has displayed this year has been impressive. I think the stat I saw last night was they're, I think, like 57-0 or 58-0 when up by 15 points in a game, and the fact that they had 58 games this year where they're up 15 just blew me away in terms of how dominant they were on both sides of the ball. I mean, number one in offensive and defensive efficiency. Usually you get a team that leans towards one side in terms of being really good offensively or defensively. They managed to do both. And what LeBron did was great, and I take nothing away from what he did carrying these guys like he did. But I think we're going to look back and see the importance of what Golden State did this year, and especially if they continue this on for years to come.
Yeah, that to me is the big key, Marcus, and that'll be my qualifier to my answer, because I think, yes, you're right. This is a historic team, a top 10 team of all time by every statistical measurement. But I think that if this is the start to a run, then yes, I definitely say without a doubt, I remember this as the Warriors winning in the beginning of that run. But let's say they win one this year and then they take a couple years off, they come back and win in a couple years and then this and that, and it's more sporadic. It's more like a Spurs dynasty, if you will. Then I think I might remember LeBron for what he did. You know, one of the not great all-time finals, not by efficiency standards, but just by sheer numbers, averaging, you know, almost a triple-double for the finals, 35 points a game, 12 rebounds, and 8 assists, you know, for the finals. And the load of carrying these players, kicking and screaming, dragging J.R. Smith, who is one of the most mercurial players you'll ever find, Iman Shumpert, Matthew Dellavedova, dragging these guys to six games with a superior against a superior team, against a healthier team. To me, I am very rarely the guy that gives credit for moral victories, but I think in losing, this might have been one of LeBron James' most impressive performances. And assuming that this is not the start of a Golden State run, that may be the thing I remember most from these finals.
Yeah, and I don't think it's going to hurt his legacy by losing this title. I think most sane people understand the challenges he was facing, and the ones who are going to attack LeBron regardless, win or lose. So he just has to chalk that up as a loss, and he can come back and focus on next season.
Now, speaking of attacking LeBron, somebody that attacked LeBron for six games was the Finals MVP Andre Iguodala, who was voted Finals MVP by a 7-4 margin over LeBron, while Steph Curry received zero votes. Marcus, who would have gotten your vote for Finals MVP?
I think I would give it to Iguodala based on not only the entire series, but he was, you know, the best guy on the court for Golden State in Game 6 when they needed him the most. And, you know, it's easy to look at the numbers and say, okay, well, Steph had better numbers, but considering the fact that he was, you know, not starting at all this season, he wasn't starting in the series to begin with, and the fact that he got promoted to the starting lineup and just had the impact and the veteran leadership that they needed to really control the series. I mean, Draymond Green started off the series not doing anything. He finished strong with a triple-double in Game 6, but Games 1 and 2, Draymond was nowhere to be found. Klay looked a little off. Klay Thompson had that one great game, and that was it. But Iggy was the glue guy, and the guy when you needed a basket or needed a stop or needed that dunk on the transition, he was there. And I think he's definitely worthy of winning the MVP. Yeah, you know, he doesn't have LeBron's numbers, but listen, they lost. I mean, sorry, they didn't lose in seven. They lost in six. So let's forget the LeBron talk for a second. We know he's great. He knows he's great. He totals he's great. I think this was definitely Iggy's award.
And to me, this is one of the most difficult MVP decisions that I've seen in the finals, just because everyone on Golden State at various times played well and played far below their averages. Like Klay Thompson, great player in the regular season. For most of the finals, my man was just kind of riding the wave. You know, you mentioned the struggles that Iguodala had, you know, early on in the series, but, you know, he was definitely a big contributing factor to the game five win, of course, the series clinching win. The only caveat I would have on that was just, I don't know what happened to him at the free throw line. Like, dude was a 75% free throw shooter during the regular season, and I don't know, he just went cold. I don't know if it was a mental thing or what, Marcus.
Yeah, he's, I'm glad it didn't cost him, but yeah, he was less than that this season. He was, under 60% at the line.
Okay.
So he's gone way down since his Philly days.
Yeah, I'm still remembering Philly, and even, he had a nice little stretch in Denver.
Yeah, no, he's going the other way, and I don't know if that's just a shooting form or technique or what, but yeah. That was the only really flaw was AD was his free throw shooting, and it didn't ultimately hurt them in the end, but he was not good.
Yeah, so and again, like you said with Steph, Steph had maybe two good games in the series. Like, he had one amazing quarter in game five, but other than that, he had, you know, two good games, and that you can't give him the MVP off of that.
No, I mean, when they needed him most in the fourth, well, that one game, he had the crazy quarter and he still lost, and then he had the 17 in the fourth in that game five win, which is probably his best overall game of the series. So yeah, I mean, I don't think even Steph would have an issue or has an issue with Iggy winning the MVP over.
Yeah. So a shout out to Andre Iguodala. Question number three, Marcus. We touched on it earlier. If you had to pick one of these options, Marcus, what would you say the Warriors are closest to? Are they A, at the start of a dynasty, B, at the start of a period of contendership, but they only win this one title, or C, was this just an aberration and they'll get back into that Western Conference mix and we'll never see them ascend to these heights again? So if you had to pick one of those three options, contender, championship dynasty, or just another good Western Conference team, where would you go?
Contender. The West is so strong. It's hard to just label teams. It's different with the East, where you can already pencil in Cleveland probably for the Eastern Conference Finals next year just based on the landscape. But if you look out West, you got to figure Durant's coming back healthy with Westbrook for one last run at least. And you got the Clippers returning, the Rockets, the Spurs are still ticking. So it's just a lot deeper field for Golden State to go through. And,
Don't forget Professor KME's Lakers with Kobe. They're always a danger.
A danger for what? Stinking up the Staples Center? San Antonio had a remarkable regular season, got stuck in a bad draw with the Clippers.
Yeah.
And got bounced in the first round. I mean, what's to say they won't be the Golden State Warriors next year, who somehow finish, you know, in a third seed and did bounce. So it's hard to really say. And plus, I mean, this team's going to change a little bit. They announced on Wednesday that they're going to help trade David Lee, who's at a big contract. So I'm not sure what they will get back in return. And if they do get something in return, if it's on each salary, but that could allow them to maybe possibly get another free agent. And they also have Draymond Green, who will be, I think, a restricted free agent this offseason as well. So there could be some changes to the roster as well that we don't know about. So I'm going to go with contender.
Yeah, I'd go contender as well. I think the West is just too deep. You know, you mentioned those teams, and there's also teams on the come up. You know, we talk about those guys that have been established in the playoff mix over the past couple of seasons, but you also got young teams like New Orleans that have, you know, arguably, you know, you could make the argument Anthony Davis is the best player not named LeBron in the league. You know, I don't think that's a ridiculous statement. You know, who knows what they'll do, you know, with another year of maturity. So I think the Warriors will be, you know, in that top two or three role in the West for the next couple of seasons. But will they win another title? You know, who knows? It's way too difficult to predict in that conference.
And you mentioned the Pelicans. I mean, the Warriors are losing their top assistant coach to the Pelicans. Alvin Gentry's gone. He'll be coaching the Pelicans, so that's already one loss that Golden State has to deal with immediately. Is Steve Kerr's right-hand offensive man is now going to be gone. So,
yeah, and that brings us to question number four, Marcus. You mentioned Alvin Gentry heading to New Orleans. We've had a number of coaching vacancies filled in the offseason already, or in the postseason already. You got the mayor, Freddie Hoiberg, in Chicago, Scott Skiles in Orlando, Billy Donovan in Oklahoma City. Which new coach do you think is going to find the fastest route to success next season, Marcus? Any of those guys, or maybe somebody off the board?
I would definitely go Fred Hoiberg. I think he can have a similar season to Steve Kerr, where, you know, Kerr came in with the situation where he had some talent presented to him. It wasn't a traditional first-year rookie job. Like, if he took the niche job, we would not be discussing Steve Kerr at the moment.
No, we wouldn't.
But Chicago is a situation where they have some talent, and Fred could come in and really be the difference maker. That's sort of like, you know, Thibodeau sort of played out his welcome there the same way Mark Jackson did in Golden State, and maybe just some new fresh blood along with the existing talent could help jump spark that team.
Yeah, I think Hoiberg might have the most success in terms of wins and losses, but I think maybe Alvin Gentry could have the most success in terms of the team growing. You know, New Orleans, you got Anthony Davis, like I mentioned. I think Tyreke Evans and Drew Holiday are still under contract. So that's a team that I think could make some noise, but you might, like, they could improve and still be the eighth or seventh or eighth seed in the West just because that conference is so tough. So I do think that, you know, he was a key to Golden State's success this year, and I think that's an intriguing coaching change. But I'll tell you this, Marcus, and maybe it's unfair because I knew my answer in my head when I framed the question in a way so that you wouldn't go this way. Mm. And I think the new coach that is going to have the most success next year is Tyronn Lue when he takes over the Cavaliers.
Oh,
because there ain't no way David Blatt's coming back. You think Blatt's coming back?
No. I don't think so.
So I'm assuming Tyronn Lue would be the call in that position
then. I think so too.
And as we've already established, the East, if you got LeBron and at least one other guy, you can get pretty deep. So I think Tyronn Lue might be another rookie coach in the finals next year.
Wouldn't that be something?
That would be great. I will miss David Blatt arguing with the reporters, though.
Man, that dude got no respect towards the end. Even the international media was going after him.
They were going after him harder than the American media, though.
Yeah.
I did not ask you about that, Coach.
What's up, Timothy Mozdov? You 28 points and double-double, and you play 9 minutes. What's going on?
Yeah, they just like, come on, man. You would think all of his European credentials would earn him more respect over there.
Not in Russia.
But you know, this is like what the international reporters have been waiting to come at him like this for a while. But now, because he's in America and he's losing in the finals, they get to actually, all their true feelings come out.
Yeah.
So, shout out to David Blatt, though. I'm sure he'll land on his feet somewhere. Question number five. What are you going to say, Marcus?
I don't know. I don't see him coaching.
I see him
right away. Not as a head coach.
No, I'm not saying in America. I'm saying that
somewhere.
Dan Gilbert's gonna break him off with a nice little severance package, and he gets to go back overseas with the quote unquote honor of taking a team to the NBA Finals.
Some honor.
Like some team is gonna give him some money, some Israeli team or Russian team.
Oh yeah, I just don't think it'll be an American team, a team that matters.
No. But, you know, maybe he'll be the coach of, like, one of the foreign Olympic teams. Maybe that'll be a nice place for him to land. I can see that happening. But question five, Marcus, we're going to stay out in L.A. Earlier this week, the Clippers made a deal with the Charlotte Hornets, where the Clippers got Lance Stephenson and the Hornets got Spencer Hawes and Matt Barnes, or at least Matt Barnes' expiring contract. What do you make of this deal, Marcus?
It's a risk for the Clippers, but it's a risk they needed to take just based on how the season ended and what limitations they might have and the salary cap. So they got, you know, Spencer Hall's contract off the books, and it definitely Lance is an upgrade over Matt Barnes, but the issue of Lance, of course, is he's a bit of a headache, and you're going to rely on guys like Chris Paul keeping him in line. And if Lance is really serious about winning, he'll fall into place on this team.
Andy was a headache that shot below 20% from three-point range last year.
Yeah, that too. He wasn't very good last year. That was another issue. But, you know, he's 24, and he could definitely start right away at the small forward position and be definitely an upgrade over Matt Barnes last season. And you never know. It really depends on what Doc and Chris Paul can do with this guy and if he's willing to go all in, because he had the option of signing a five-year deal with Indiana, and he ended up taking this weird deal with Charlotte, where he's got, I think, a couple of team options coming up. So he'll be playing for a contract. So he needs to really cut the shit and get back to doing what he did that one season in Indianapolis to get that deal.
Yeah, I think this could be one of those moves where if this does not work out, not only could this be a bad sign for Lance Stephenson, but it could be a bad sign for Doc Rivers, because
GM Doc,
like we talked about, you know, the coach Doc hasn't really been the problem with this team not getting over the hump. It's been what the GM has done. And you talk about Lance Stephenson being a bit of a head case, and that's all well and good if he's producing like he was in Indiana. But if we get to Charlotte, or if Doc gets to Charlotte, Lance Stephenson, and you add him to a locker room that has already kind of been rumored to be not the most stable place in the first place, I think this could be a bad sign. And as far as the Hornets go, man, like, that just shows you how much they want to get rid of this dude. And that also tells me a lot about Lance Stephenson, because it's like, okay, if working for Larry Bird couldn't get your head right, if working for Michael Jordan couldn't get your head right, I don't know, Marcus. I don't have much faith that Doc Rivers and Steve Ballmer are going to get this guy straight.
Yeah, well, I mean, the one, I guess Doc came out today and said, hey, look, we brought him in to come off the bench. But the one guy who might be able to help in addition is if they go after Paul Pierce and slot him as the starting small forward and add another veteran guy who might be able to help him out. But yeah, I mean, he did fine under Bird towards the end. I think he definitely respects the hell out of Larry Bird. He's been open about that. I don't know what happened with him and Jordan and Charlotte. And, I mean, Charlotte in general this year was not what.
Yeah, they definitely underachieved.
They took a step back. Yeah. So it might have been a bad fit for him in Charlotte. I think towards the end in Indiana, he was fine minus the playoff situation with all that stuff. And the rumors and the blowing of the LeBron and all that stuff. But, I mean, it's a risk. Let me clarify.
Yeah, considering.
I've already discussed LeBron's meat once before.
All
so.
Of me beeping. Yeah. this is kind of our wrap-up on NBA talk until, I guess, the draft.
Next week? Well, I guess it'll be 2 weeks soon.
2 weeks, so we'll take a break from NBA talk next week.
And then summer league, I'm doing bad.
Okay, so maybe this you'll get to see who's the next Dellavedova.
That'd be my mission.
Who's out there playing too damn hard for summer league?
Last year it was Matthew Dellavedova himself and Aaron Kraft, so.
I'm not gonna make generalizations here.
And I believe Aaron Kraft gets a ring because I think at some point he was on the Warriors roster during the season. Let me see.
Yeah, that's
No, I was on the D League team for Santa Cruz. Maybe he doesn't get a ring. That'd have been great.
So yeah, shout out to the Golden State Warriors and everybody out there in the Bay Area. Enjoy it, celebrate it. Don't act a fool.
They didn't. They no issues last night.
Yeah. So what's the parade for, scheduled for?
Friday,
yeah. So Friday, this should be out by Friday or on Friday. So, yeah, hopefully there will be no fires and no riots, quote-unquote, by the time this goes down. Because you know Oakland is a chocolate city, and you know how they'll categorize you in the media, you thugs.
It's just like Compton.
From Oakland to Sactown, the Bay Area, and back down, Cali is where they put their Mac down. We're going to give the Warriors some love. So that is it for this segment. We're coming back, though, Marcus, in segment four. And I have a sneaking suspicion that unlike the Warriors, you know, showing love to the Warriors, there are going to be a couple people that you show no love to in segment four.
Zero love.
Zero love at all. So if you want to find out who Marcus is hating on this week, stay tuned, because we got more Kings of Sport right after this.
That one is hot fire.
Everybody to the wild, wild west. A state that's untouchable like Elliot Ness. The track hits your eardrum like a slug to your chest. Pack a vest for your Jimmy in the city of sex. We in that sunshine state where the bomb ass him be. The state where you never find a dance floor empty and pimp speed. On a mission for them greens. Lean, mean, money making machines serving fiends. I've been in the game for 10 years making rap tunes. Ever since honeys was wearing Sassoon. Now it's 95 and they clock me and watch me diamond shining. Looking like a Rob Liberace. It's all good, from Diego to the Bay. Your city is the bomb if your city making pain. Throw up a finger if you feel the same way. Straight putting it down for California, yeah.
And the dream season is now complete. The Golden State Warriors are the 2015 NBA champions. Their first title in 40 years. And how sweet it must be for those crazy loyal Bay Area fans.
Welcome back to the world's most dangerous sports show. Follow the danger online at facebook.com/thekingsofsport.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
Welcome back to the Kings of Sport, a part of the High Voltage Radio family. HighVoltageRadio.com is where you can find the freshest, most unique, most diverse, some would say most deranged assortment of podcasts available on the internet today. Shows such as Axology, Bayside High and Drunk, The Gravy Age, Mad Mock, Pittsburgh Nerd, Podcast Unknown, Robin Slim, Z-Pac Nation, Mustache Cash Dash, Ebony and Ivory Cast, and of course, Mr. Throwback Thursday, hosted by frenemies of the program, Bill and Jamie. And I think I'm going to make the call this week, Marcus, and see if we can have that summit next week on the show, now that the NBA's done and now that hockey's done.
It's about time.
So it's about time. Things have been stirred up for too long. A lot of things have been said on these podcast streets, so we're going to get it. We're going to either squash this beef or somebody is not going to be around. Two podcasts in them, maybe one podcast leaves. So you got that to look forward to in the future. But right now we are talking about segment four, the segment that you wait for each and every week. It's our repository of ratchetness, where we take the best stories or the most interesting stories or just the plain craziest stories from the world of sports and pop culture, and we throw it in the pot and serve it up to you hot. And this week, Marcus, a favorite question mark topic of segment four makes his triumphant return.
Michael Sam.
Now, last I heard, Marcus, Michael Sam, you know, he'd done the Dancing with the Stars thing. You know, he's moving on with his football career. He's making that transition and going to the CFL, which I thought was a very great move for him, both culturally and from a football perspective. So what could possibly be going wrong with Michael Sam now?
This motherfucker. I really wanted this to work out. I really, really did. I was really rooting for him, but I got to jump off the bandwagon here with Michael Sam after this latest incident. As you mentioned, he joined the CFL, the Montreal Alouettes, go Canada, and he went up there hoping to get his, you know, second shot and get some football reps under his belt and play. And that dream appears to be over because...
What, he get cut?
No, he didn't get cut. No, it wasn't a performance thing. He is actually suspended by the CFL.
Okay.
The Montreal Alouettes suspended him. He was placed on a suspended list after he decided to just go home out of the blue last week. The general manager said, quote, "He wanted to go home, and that's what he did. I don't know why," general manager Jim Popp told the Montreal Gazette. "When a guy wants to go home, they go home. He had some personal things to take care of. I wouldn't be surprised if he returns. I'm surprised he left. I was very surprised. If he doesn't come back, I would think football's over for him. He's the one that has to face that. But I don't think he doesn't want to play football. That's why he came here."
This is really interesting to me because it's like, come on, man. Like Marcus said, I think a lot of people have been out here supporting Michael Sam, and a lot of folks had questioned whether the NFL gave him a truly fair shot or whether there was some other things involved, you know, being openly gay and whatnot. You know, maybe the league was not as open as they could have been to him. But this was, I think, a chapter in the Michael Sam story that a lot of people were like, okay, this would be good for him, you know, going to the CFL, and we'll see, you know, if A, he can play, and B, if, you know, some of the hoopla around him will die down once people just see him as a football player. And then, you know, he's like, nah, man, I just want to go home. So,
well, there's more to the story. Have you heard the rumor as to why he wanted to go home?
No, I have not heard the rumor, Marcus. What is going on in the life of Michael Sam?
The rumor is that someone on the team insulted him and basically hurt his feelings. He said he's a bad football player.
Wait a minute. They said he's a bad football player.
Here's the quote. "All I know is I heard somebody make a comment about him, about how he wasn't very good and he wasn't having a very good camp. He took it personally and was pouting in his room," the source said. "It's very strange. I have no idea what's going on. He might have a personal issue."
Well, to that I have two words. Negro, please.
Yeah.
Because it's like, you know, here's the thing, Marcus. I could have understood if he wanted to step away if somebody was making
a slanderous,
gay slurs. Yes. Yeah, being disrespectful to him in that way.
I would totally understand that.
But even then, that's something that you almost have to expect coming in. Almost like a Jackie Robinson type of deal, where you've got to rise above the foolishness. So it's like, yeah, okay, if there was a gay slur or an anti-homosexual slur, okay, I could maybe see him feeling some type of way about it. But just say, hey, I don't think you're going to make the team, and then you decide to go in your room and prove that you're not ready to make this team, that to me shows a lack of maturity, a lack of self-awareness.
Yes.
And maybe, again, something deeper here. And you know, it's hopefully it's not something that is a problem. Hopefully it's just a case of this kid needs to grow up. But, man, like, if you're going to give up your opportunity for because people are saying bad things about you.
And the reason why I'm upset is because it's not so much what Michael Sam's doing with his career, but it's the Nets person who wants to be an openly gay athlete and now has to face the foolishness and the bullshit left behind because of Michael Sam. You know, it's going to be assumed that he doesn't know how to handle himself or he's not ready for the spotlight of being an openly gay player. It's going to make everything else difficult for the Nets person. I mean, just imagine, you mentioned Jackie Robinson. You know, just imagine if Jackie Robinson, this happened to him, and he decided to just give up because someone called him dark-skinned. I mean, what would that do for the next person up? So, for Larry Doby. So, it's just frustrating that, you know, if more power to him for coming forward and coming out, but if he wasn't really ready to handle the situation, then maybe he wasn't the right guy to do it.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's a situation where he got hyped up and he's like, okay, I'm going to be able to do this. I'm going to be able to handle this. But then when it got really real, like he realized he was in over his head. But it's like, come on, man. Like let's just look at this from a football aspect. If you are on the borderline of being cut from the CFL, it might be game over, man. Because if you can't, and it's not to disparage the CFL, but it is obviously not at the same level of the NFL and maybe not at the level of like an arena league in terms of being able to make the transition to the NFL.
You get more guys coming from the CFL than the arena league. Arena league is definitely below CFL.
Okay. Maybe I just got deep-seated resentment towards Canada. Well, you know, maybe
Let it go. Hey. Let it go. Hey.
My heart is still frozen.
Oh.
Boom. But bam, there you go. That's why people tune in for the witty topical humor. But if I'm Michael Sam and it's like, come on, man, like this very possibly could be your last shot. Like after this, maybe it is the Arena League that's the only other option for him to try to ply his trade as a football player. So you would think that just as an athlete, Marcus, just as a man, like I'm sure people have said things against you coming up in your career. People certainly said things against me in my career. And if you were just to turn and walk away just because somebody was like, oh, I don't know why that light-skinned son of a bitch thinks he can work here. Like, where would you be right now?
Hey, you got at least fight back, at least punch dude in the face, something. I mean, come on.
Like, yeah, to give up without a fight, like that to me is it speaks to, maybe you're not built for the NFL. Maybe you're not built for football at the professional level.
Not even that. Just built for just like
being a man.
Yeah, just, I mean, being a human being. I mean, man or woman. If you're going to lob some insult at a woman, you know, don't get the stereotype confused about, you know, a woman bowing to a man or another woman. I mean, a strong woman is going to stand up for herself, and
this isn't even a gay thing, because I know there are plenty of gay people I know that if you come at them sideways,
they'll cut you.
Exactly, they will check you. So I think
this is just a emotional self esteem thing.
Yes, and I think that you hit the nail on the head. It's a self esteem and a self awareness thing, because you know Michael Sam last year, it was all peaches and cream, you know, even though he didn't make it in the NFL. Outside of that, everything else in Michael Sam's life was him being hoisted upon people's shoulders as a hero. And I'm sure there were some people, especially in the social media age, that came at him with some offensive terms. But for the most part, he could shut them out and just bask in the cheers and the spotlight and people patting him on the back. Hey, attaboy, Michael. There you go, Michael. But after that, you got to come back to the real world and the real world that professional football players go through, the real world that gay people go through in the society, and the real world that everybody goes through. You know, no, everybody is not going to have the world at their feet or the doors opened up for them. You know, you got to work for what you want. And this is just, like you said, a slap in the face to not only any gay players that might follow in his footsteps, but just people that put on a uniform in general.
Yeah.
Like, there's only so many professional football spots in the world, and the CFL is one league that you can be employed and make a decent living in. And for him to have this opportunity and back out, apparently because he either his feelings got hurt or his pride got hurt or whatever, it's a bad look all the way around. And it may be his last shot at this.
I think he's done.
You think he's done for good?
Yeah. Done for good.
Even if he comes back,
yep.
You think he's... So, and here's the question, Marcus. Do you think he's done because of his attitude or because of his play? Like, which do you think is the bigger reason he won't be making money playing football?
Ultimately, I think it's going to be his play, but it didn't sound like he was doing great besides his anonymous person who lobbed us in. So it didn't sound like he was wanting to be a lot for the team anyway. So I'm going to say ultimately it comes down to his personal play.
And this is, to me, and this is not even a slight against Michael Sam, but the year he won SEC Defensive Player of the Year, what was going on with that? Because obviously, who was it? Shane Ray followed him up the following season, this past season.
Mm-hmm.
And from all intents and purposes, Shane Ray is a beast. Like, what do you think was going on? That, like, was he really worthy of that award? Or do you think that it just happened to be that they exceeded expectations as a team and he was one of the recognizable defensive players, so he got that award?
No, I think it was more, you know, it's more the NFL mindset. You got to be a certain size for a certain position. And for the position he was playing, he was just a smaller guy. But sometimes in college, especially in, you know, the SEC is not really known for their offense. In terms of you have teams who run not your traditional pro sets, your Florida Gators of the world, who are running these non-traditional spread offenses. So it might be a little easier for defenses to control that. But in terms of transitioning from a college to a pro offense based on his size, it might have just been a bit of a stretch.
Yeah, so this may be it for Michael Sam in terms of professional football, but I think he'll land on his feet. Like, I think he'll find and maybe that's the part of the problem, Marcus. Maybe he got a taste of that celebrity life and all the kudos for being this pioneer, that ultimately that's what he wants to do. But the trick is, in order to keep getting those gravitas and those accolades, you kind of have to do something.
I mean, he's not going to get like the, like a broadcast position,
or
anything like that. Based on what? I mean, he's got no football resume professionally to stand on.
There's really no interest in a reality show now.
No interest in reality shows. He seems to have a bad attitude about things. So I don't know what he's going to do going forward to. I mean, if he's not doing football, then what are you going to do professionally?
That is a good question. Like, I wonder what he went to school for, because that degree is going to come in handy in a couple of months, Michael.
Yeah. So I mean, I wish him the best, but I definitely don't think that football is going to be in his future anytime soon.
You know what his Twitter handle is?
What's that?
At Michael Sam NFL.
Oh, man.
Come on, buddy. Just because you say it don't mean it's true.
You should change your handle to Nate Mosaic TNA.
I was going to say, I'm going to either change it like Nate Mosaic TNA or at Nate Milton Fox Sports News.
Yeah, just go for
it. Like, again, like, do you work for Fox Sports? No, but if I put it here, maybe, maybe eventually I'll get there. Like, so yeah, holla at your boy at Michael Sam NFL. I wonder if they're going to make him change it. Or do they just let him hold on to that?
Yeah, I'd probably let him hold on to it.
Yeah. So we'll see what the future holds for Michael Sam. I guess, though, with that name, and I don't want to offend anybody, but, you know, if you haven't been offended listening to this show this long or all these years, you probably won't get offended by this. But with a name like Michael Sam, maybe he could transition into becoming a white man and be transracial, and things will work out for him.
Sort of like a certain figure.
Yeah, there's been a little bit of coverage on this story, Marcus. I don't know if most of our listeners have heard about the Rachel Dozier story.
Yeah, if you haven't heard of the story, then God bless you, because I've been trying to avoid the story, actually. And wherever I turn, it's just everywhere. But essentially, Rachel Dozier was the head of the Spokane chapter of NAACP.
Which in and of itself is funny.
Because it's Spokane, Washington, and they have a chapter. And she identified as black, but as part of a, I think part of a, a TV interview. I think the newspaper got tipped off. We discovered that this woman who was identifying as black is actually white. And this has now led into several discussions about race, several discussions about just jokes, which I'm sort of over the jokes because they're not that funny. And then I think the real discussion that should be had is about mental health, and something is clearly going on with her emotionally that I believe her family had adopted African Americans. And yeah. I think that might have been one of the reasons her brothers are black.
Brothers and sisters, yeah, are black.
And I mean, this woman went all out. She, if you look at her, she looks a little tan. She looks a little orange.
She hit the hottest wig spots to get them weaves done tight.
The weave was on point. She went to Howard University.
Yes.
Already blacker than I am by doing HU.
She served on the NAACP, something I've never done.
Nothing I've ever wanted to do. Nothing I've never crossed my mind before. So really, she's got more on me. But, you know, at the end of the day, you're deceiving not only yourself, but when you become the chapter president, you're deceiving a community.
Yeah.
So there's a bunch of issues here, and I don't know where you want to start.
She was a visiting professor of African American studies. Like, she is super black, despite not being black at all.
Yeah.
Like, not one iota. But yeah, there's a lot of ways we can go on this. I think we'll start at tying it into Michael Sam, the self-awareness aspect, because I think this is where she got in trouble in the first place, you know, when being confronted with this, and obviously there's something going on with that family dynamic, because her parents were the one that kind of put her on blast. They're like, she's white. She's German and Swiss and like super white. Like, and they show pictures of her growing up in Montana, which, you know, I made the comment on Review and Impact that being a little white girl from Montana, that is like super white, like drinking a glass of milk in the middle of a snowstorm watching Frasier white. Like, yeah. That is as Caucasian as you can get. And so there's already that weird dynamic with her and her parents. And then when the reporter asked her, you know, are you an African American? Which seems to be a pretty direct and simple question, Marcus. Her answer was, what do you mean? I don't understand what you mean. And then when they finally got back to her and she got up and dipped and broke out from the interview, left her purse. And then when they finally caught up to her at her office, she was like, you know, well, I don't like that term, African-American. I identify as black, which opens up this whole quote-unquote transracial thing, which is A, pissing off black people, and B, I guess, pissing off transgendered people.
Yeah. Not the term I would use. It's a little too soon.
Yeah. They're like, well, Caitlin can be transgendered. I'm transracial. No, no. With one at a time.
Yeah, doesn't work that way.
But yeah, I think there is some sort of delusion going on there, and maybe it's in response to, you know, her upbringing, and maybe she truly did identify more with her adopted brothers and sisters than she did with her own flesh and blood. But as Brian and I talked about on Review and Impact, there was a way for her to do everything that she did as a white woman and still do all this good for the community and build bridges and all this good stuff, you know. But because she chose to lie to people, that kind of invalidates all this good work that she did. Because, you know, we'll, like, black people are real forgiving. Like, if you want to be down for the cause, mm-hmm. we'll accept anybody. But if you were coming in under false pretenses, then that changes the discussion.
Yeah, I think we all have that one friend who is white who swears in their head that they're black. And you sort of accept them for who they are. You don't really judge them for identifying with black culture. You know, there's a line they can't cross. I've had people who've crossed that line in the past with me. And, you know, that hasn't sat well with me. But there's a point, you're okay, you know, he's a white dude, but he's down, he's cool. And I think that would have been fine with her, but, you know, you can't, I mean, that's not to say that she could have been chapped the president as a white woman. I think that would have raised...
Yeah, I think she could have served.
She could have served, I think, but I think there would have been a glass ceiling, which, is that fair or not? Who knows? Not my call, but I think there would have been a glass ceiling she would have hit at some point based on her race.
I think it is fair. You can't be the white president. like, let's not be politically correct, Marcus. Like, yeah, there's certain positions that you should not have.
Are you serving on this board?
I mean, that is fair, but I mean, it's like, if you think about it, she is the inverse of Dave Chappelle's Clayton Bigsby sketch.
Yeah.
Like, instead of being the black white supremacist, she is the white black social freedom fighter.
I mean, let's start at the very beginning. Like, what does the NAACP do in 2015, to be honest?
Well, first of all, let's start with that name. Like, we still
color, going, we don't colored, yeah.
Yeah, we still going colored in 2015. Like, I don't know what the NAACP does besides get outrageous stuff.
Not only that, I mean, go back to last year for our local chapter in Los Angeles who honored Donald Sterling.
Yeah.
Twice. So it's like, I don't know anyone who personally is involved with NAACP. Didn't they have that special with Lou Rawls? Wasn't it NAACP? It was UNCF.
Yeah, the United Negro College Fund.
Negro, another term we can kill.
which do you find worse, United Negro College Fund or National Association for the Advancement of Colored People?
The Advancement of Colored People.
That sounds like a white man made up the name, too.
Mm-hmm.
National Association for the Advancement of Colored People.
Yeah, I can live with Negro, but the colored people, the advancement of those colored people, might want to change it up some.
But this is, to me, it's you know, you talk about the aspect of the deceit and the deception, and at what point do people at what point does your cultural identity supersede your racial identity, or does it, or should it? Because I've had friends hit me up on Facebook and it's like, well, you know, isn't this the same thing as somebody saying, you know, I'm a Christian or I'm gay and this is how I'm going to live my lifestyle. Like, no, these are completely different things.
It's completely different things. It's complex, but really at the end of the day, it shouldn't be. I mean, in a perfect quote-unquote world, we wouldn't have races. We wouldn't see races. But the reality is that some of y'all do see race, and that puts us in a situation where we need to be a little more defensive and a little more protective of who we are as a person.
And here's the other thing, though. Just thinking about what you're saying, Marcus, if she really identified with the culture and she wanted to do good within the community, wouldn't her being a white woman that was down for the cause do more good than being this woman that is perpetrating and posing and fronting?
Yeah, I'm just saying, I see no race. I don't see myself as black, white. I just see myself as a human being who wants to, in this case, do what's best for the African-American community in Spokane. And I think that would have been...
All two of them.
And on top of that, she needed to not do the whole spray tan. I don't want to call it blackface. I don't think it's true blackface she's putting on. But the front that she, you know, you saw some of the videos from her, I guess, like at Howard and all the, yeah, it's just like she was really just going all out on this whole persona, which she didn't have to.
Have you seen the video that her husband made for her?
No.
Like, oh man, it was like,
and shame on him too. He's part of this problem as well.
It was like the worst R&B song in the world, like dedicated to his wife. This is before. This is way before the recent news. But yeah, he was just singing to her. But yeah, like I think this is this might be a bit stereotypical, but I think maybe he went along with it because it's like, okay, moms will accept her. He's like, hey, if what moms don't know won't hurt her. And now he's got a lot of explaining to do.
A whole lot.
He's like, wait a minute. You knew she was white the whole time?
Yeah, buddy.
Damn. Sisters don't have it hard enough, do they, Marcus?
It's rough out there.
Like, I would say in the pecking order of people, like, you know, of course, you know, hey, no offense to our Caucasian brothers, but white men still enjoying that nice little run at the top, followed by probably...
The white man is like the John Cena.
Yeah, the white...
Of life.
The John Cena of life, yeah. Hey, every now and then he'll have some ups and downs, but ultimately he's going to reign.
He'll do the job every now and then, but...
Every now and then he'll let a black president get through.
Yeah, but trust me, he's ready to, his combat spot is coming. He's coming back. He's about to Hulk up and
yeah, he's done his share bearing.
Ooh. Yeah.
Message.
Ooh.
Yeah, so I'd say, you know, as a black man things are getting better, but you know, there's always, you know, the specter of our past, America's past, looming in the shadows and sometimes right in front of our face when it comes to deals with the police. You know, our Hispanic brothers, they going through it every now and then. White women certainly, you know, are fighting for their equal rights in the workplace and things like that. But I would argue, Marcus, that nobody gets it more than black women because they get the women stuff and they get the black stuff.
And they get it from black people and from white people.
Yes, outside and inside.
Which is even more baffling.
Yes, I wanted to see if Sierra would hop on tonight with us, but she was busy. I was like, how convenient, you going to miss this discussion? But yeah, like black women they don't have it the easiest, let's just say.
No, they don't.
So shout out to you, black women out there. Hashtag black girls rock. Is that the hashtag of the day?
That or ask Rachel.
Ask Rachel if black girls rock. I'm sure she'll tell you yes. But you know what, Marcus? This whole Rachel Dozell situation, it made me look within and look at our own backyard, look at this program, the Kings of Sport. And one of the things that avid listeners of the program will know is that you are a member of a group called NABJ. And I was wondering what the... what's going on? I'm sure this is like a hot topic on all the NABJ message boards and think tanks and whatnot.
Funny enough, it actually hasn't been.
Really?
Yeah, there hasn't really been any email discussions about what's going on. I was expecting some, but I, you know.
Didn't they do the, was it Melissa Harris Perry or Paris?
Perry Harris, you know,
yeah. She also has her braids untied. Didn't she do an interview with her this week?
She did. I didn't see it. I only saw like a portion of the Matt Lauer interview on the Today Show.
Yes, I figured, you know who they should have had interviewer?
Who's that?
Come on, Brian Williams. That would have been the interview for the ages. Brian Williams and Rachel Dozier, you could have called it Liar Liar. But I definitely thought that like NABJ would be buzzing about this this foolishness.
No, I mean, and sadly, I think the real discussion that should be going on has been overshadowed by just everyone making jokes, and you know,
yeah.
Jokes
a
are great,
of,
and all,
a lot
but
of memes, a lot of
a
memes.
Lot of memes, and part of me did and does hope that she can laugh about this because I do. I mean, I can only imagine if. We talked about Michael Sam and self-esteem, and we'll get serious for a second, but just imagine if she was someone who didn't really have a strong self-esteem, and she now went through this thing, and now she's the butt of the internet.
Yep.
That emotionally, that can really drain on you.
And the internet has no chill.
Internet has no chill, and, you know, God forbid something happens to this woman because of essentially cyberbullying. And, you know, I just... That's why I'm not really... Yeah, they're funny, haha, the first time. But how many jokes can you make about, you know, this woman? So,
I think there's something that, in almost a karmic sense, like, yeah, you know, the first wave and the second wave of jokes is like, okay, that's kind of her penance, like, you know, public humiliation. But then the way the internet likes to pile on, after a while, you start to feel sorry for this person, even though they was the one that lied in the first place.
You do, and that's the crazy thing is like it the roles reverse, and you're like, all right, just you know, let her live, like you know, she's stepped down from her position of the NAACP. She's now the you know a public laughing stock. I mean, what more do you want from this woman to go through?
Yeah, so keep your head up, Rachel. But again, focusing on the Kings of Sport, I think now, Marcus, if before the elections take place, you know, you mentioned that you were running for office, I think you need to let the people, because you are pretty light-skinned yourself, brother. It could be a Thomas Howell, Soul Man situation. If you are white, that Vandenberg, you know, that's a little suspicious. So if you are white, you can come out here and announce your trans racism on the Kings of Sport, and there will be no repercussions from the general public.
She might be a little darker than me.
I think so. She very well might be.
She might be.
that would be crazy. Like, if you worked at BT and you're on NABJ, and it's like, wait a minute. If that, like, they just started checking all the light skins. Like, hey, we gotta redouble our efforts to make sure. Sorry about this, everyone. Like, Vandenberg, that's real. And that hair.
Yeah. The hair is really the curveball.
You're like, black folks don't have chromes.
Yeah.
Like, wait a minute, Marcus. Now it's all adding up. But that is, I mean, not to make light, but when we were talking about it before, about the secret origins, that is not the most common affliction for African Americans.
Oh, the Crohn's?
Yeah.
No, it's
like, as opposed to say like sickle cell.
Yeah, it's more traced to the Jewish community, but I don't have any Jewish ties. And then just like, you know, regular Anglo-Saxon. So yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, Marcus, they might be looking at you real suspect come election season.
Nah, I mean, I've been around for almost 10 years now in this organization, so.
Well, how long was Rachel in her organization?
That's a good point.
To be fair.
Yes, that's true.
Because she's around our age, like
she was born in 77.
Okay, so yeah, she's exactly my age then. So she's 36 or 37 or 38, depending on when her birthday falls. So yeah, she graduated from college probably in the early 2000s. So she's been running this game for at least 10 years.
Side note, your podcast co-host just tweeted out a funny photo of Brian Mann did a Twitter audit report of Ditzy Tartar's Twitter account. Only 57% of her Twitter followers are actually real.
Ooh.
She's at 135,000 fake followers on Twitter.
Wow. That's crazy.
And of course, he tweeted at TNA Ditzy and a photo of it.
That is crazy. Like, how many followers does she have?
Let me see here. 334,000.
Damn.
Yeah. One for every viewer on Destination America, just about.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's pretty close to their Destination America viewership.
Yeah.
The actual Impact Wrestling Twitter feed has 389. You would think it'd be more.
Yeah.
Because during the spike, like even when they were on spike, they were averaging, you know, just under 1 million people. So it's like you figure some of that would translate to Twitter followers, but maybe that speaks to the audience that they were garnering, not the most technologically savvy.
Ditzy's a star.
So yeah, half of her followers are
more than half, yeah.
Wow. I don't know how many. So is this a real program you can?
Yeah, there's a website. I mean, that's half is a. I mean, we all have fake followers, but half is a
I was gonna say, like I know I probably got like a couple bots on there, stuff here and there, but yeah, half.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, because I've got what I'm looking at my Twitter page right now. As of this recording, I've got just under 1,400 followers. So if half of them were fake, that would be depressing.
Yeah. Now I don't want to know.
Right. It's like half of your followers are fake. Like, eh. But yeah, so keep your head up, Rachel. What do you think this ends, Marcus? Do you think that she is something, this story is something that has legs, or do you think by the time we hit the 4th of July, this will be something in the back burner?
Bad burner. We have a short attention span. Something else will happen. And he'll be on to the next joke. So
like, remember a week ago, the story was when the police were beating up black people at pools?
Yep. How distracted we were by some woman who's really not harming any of us. We've already moved on to the next story that doesn't matter as much.
How quickly we've been distracted. Mm-hmm. Almost makes you think it was a plan. Ain't no NAACP office in Spokane.
Yeah. You've been to Spokane.
You can't fool me, media. I almost moved to Spokane. That's
I heard of that story. What was behind that?
Yeah, because I was it Gonzaga, the university out there?
Yes.
I was looking to, this is probably 97, maybe 98. I was trying to decide whether to head to Okinawa, Japan with my parents, because my father was being stationed over there. Or this was after my first year at Dean College. And I was like, okay, well, Dean says I can't come back because of, certain unfortunate circumstances. So the options are to either find another place to go to school or to head to Japan. And Gonzaga was probably my first choice because in terms of continuing my limited college baseball career, they were the only ones that took a slight interest in me.
Mm-hmm.
So there was some correspondence back and forth. But at the end of the day, the amount of money that they were going to pay in terms of a partial scholarship was not financially viable. So I ended up headed to Japan. So that I could have... Who knows? I could have been the, like Brian Mann said on a Review and Impact, I could have been the president of the Spokane NAACP chapter.
And how long were you in Japan for?
I was in Japan for 2 years.
Okay.
So basically the time I would have spent at Gonzaga is pretty much the time I would have spent in Japan.
Okay.
So 2 or 3 years. So it would have been interesting though, because I don't know what would have happened had I gone there. Like where would I be now?
Hmm. Not in Canada, I would say.
No, because, why go to Canada when, full disclosure, there's lots of available white women in Spokane.
Yeah.
Like, that's the Western holding tank for them. Now I'm going to get angry letters from white women. It's not like that.
Not the first time. Yeah.
Exactly. I haven't had one in a while, though, so it'll be refreshing. But yeah, so it was, I probably wouldn't have gone to Canada. I still would have done some form of broadcasting. Chances are I probably would have been a good chance. I would have been kicked out of Gonzaga too. Like it's a very likely chance that, especially if I'm on the baseball team, like there's a probable chance that, cause me and college did not go well together. Like, the courses that I enjoyed, I excelled at, but just kind of the general education stuff.
It was a struggle for me too.
Yeah. So I think I probably would have ended up doing doing something, maybe being a high school gym teacher in Spokane, Washington, which is a random ass life course.
Yeah.
Yes, it could have been instead of the Godfather, it'd be the Coach Nate.
Coach Nate.
Like, hurry up, kids. My wife Rachel's coming by in an hour. It's a beautiful black woman, a Nubian goddess. That would be the funniest thing ever if that's what happened in the alternate reality.
You married Rachel.
I convinced her not to join the NAACP, not because of her real ethnicity, but just because I don't have time to be going to all them damn meetings.
What could have been?
So because of laziness, we would have been spared this national conversation on the transracial movement.
Some would say the African-American way.
You lazy, good for nothing, advanced colored people. Oh, this show, like, we started off on such a positive note, remembering the life and times of Dusty Rhodes and celebrating the Warriors championship victory. Shout out to MC Hammer, big Warriors fan. Maybe, would you say Hammer is the Clipper Daryl of Warriors Nation?
Yeah, I don't, no one comes to mind. Like,
who's the most notable Warriors fan other than Hammer?
You might be Hammer.
Yeah, I'm thinking at least the most vocal, especially on Twitter.
Yeah, definitely on Twitter.
Like, if you follow MC Hammer, it's been nothing but Warriors tweets, and he's at the game wearing like four different layers of Warriors apparel. So shout out to Hammer and everybody in the Bay Area for that championship win, and to our listeners in Cleveland, and especially one in particular, at Club Andy.
He is so optimistic.
Yeah, he was. He was.
Almost cocky, confident.
Yeah, he was very confident.
Yeah.
But I guess the silver lining is, at least it could have been worse. Like, they could have been at full strength and lost in seven games after being up 3-0.
Yeah, they could have been swept after Kyrie got hurt, so.
Yeah, like, that would have been true Cleveland. Or they could have pushed it to seven games if they had won game six, but then LeBron gets hurt in the first minute of game seven.
Yeah.
That's, like, true Cleveland. So, look, on the bright side, Cleveland is definitely going to be, like, the team to beat in the East next year, so.
That's assuming Kevin Love comes back.
I think even without Love.
I don't know.
Healthy Varejão back, you get a healthy Kyrie.
I don't know. Let's not pretend this team was, like, doing great. I mean, when for a good part of the season, they struggled. They weren't good. And whether that's new to eyes or not, you know, you take out Kevin Love.
Trade, I think. Yeah. Huh? I think that was before they made the trade, though.
Like, yeah, but, I mean, that trade ultimately, it got them to the finals. But what cost them in the finals, besides the injuries, that trade? You got it. J.R. Smith, Iman Shumpert, and Timothy Mozgov. Who had all had their flaws in this series. Not three guys you would think that you could build a championship dynasty around.
But, like, especially at the pivot spot, like, if you give me Mozgov and backed up by Varejão or vice versa, I think they're solid there. Of course, you're solid with LeBron. Tristan Thompson, all he does is rebound, but he does that pretty well. The question for me is Kevin Love, because, like, if we get if they get the Kevin Love that we saw for most of the season, I don't think, like, he adds offense, but I don't think in terms of the team, like, I think there are better fits than Kevin Love for what they want to do.
I think he's gone.
So you think he's gone? So that's my thing. I think if they can get something good back, like, do you think they do a sign and trade, or what do you think is the move there?
No, I think they just lose him.
Yeah. Oh, snap. I just got a message from E from the Atomic Podcast. I guess we had talked a couple weeks ago, and they were like, when do you think we can hook up again and have some great discussion? And I was just looking, and I was like, probably this particular date, which happens to be today.
Whoops.
So, yeah, it gets, things get a little hectic around, especially, like, if you could see my podcast calendar, which there really isn't one. It's kind of like Mel Kiper's big board. It's in my head. But, yeah, so public apologies. Shout out to the Cannon, and E. We'll definitely try to get you in within the next couple of weeks.
Listen, if you want to get booked on the show, reach out to me. Reach out to Responsible One. I'll put it on the calendar.
That's the key. Reach out to Marcus because he's more responsible. You know, he's light skinned. Some would say very light skinned. So you know, you want something done right. I'm not even gonna
go light.
I was gonna say go white.
Nah, but, no.
We're not going. Mark Vanderberg.
Mark.
And that's your. I don't know which would be more Caucasian. Because Marcus, if you spell it with a K, that's real European. That's
European.
It's Marcus Vanderberg or Mark. Mark Vanderberg.
I'd be a stretch four.
Marcus Vanderberg, Coach David Blatt's favorite bench player. But yeah, so shout out to The Atomic Podcast. You can follow them on Twitter at DA Atomic Podcast. So at The Atomic Podcast on Twitter. And speaking of Twitter, Marcus, where can people find you on social media and get your opinions on what baseball parks to hit this summer?
You can find me on Twitter, Instagram at Mark Rowell, MarcoWill. And thanks for all the tweets this week. I think we got other requests in about song choices and topics for this week, so thank you.
Yeah, there was a really good topic that Ryan had sent us on Twitter in regards to FIFA and the discussion we were having last week with Sepp Blatter, but due to time, we didn't get to it this week, so we might get to it next week. But yeah, as Marcus had just mentioned, let Marcus know, because I'm going to forget.
Yeah.
Somewhere between work and then doing Review and Impact and then talking to, like, this week we talked to Ken Resnick on Pipe Bomb Radio. Like, I'm going to forget. It's going to happen. And I'll be drinking, so.
That's the key.
So that's the key out of all of them. That's the one. But, yeah, so if you do want to talk to me, though, and give me some feedback on the show or just want to converse about the sport, world of sports or pro wrestling. You see your boy Jermaine, who's I don't know what Jermaine thought he was accomplishing by telling us that the East was weak when both you and I predicted the Warriors in six.
Jermaine just be talking.
Like, I don't know who he was trying to impress with his knowledge of the weak Eastern Conference. But you can hit me up, even Jermaine can hit me up on Twitter, in the number 8, MOZAIK, Nate Mosaic on Twitter. Follow the show, Kospod, KOS_POD on Twitter. If you feel like voting, there's still time to vote for us for the June podcast of the month. You got a little under half the month left. And the last time I checked, Marcus, which was a couple days ago, we were still in the top 10.
Oh, cool.
So I think if everybody took 5 minutes to vote, all of our listeners, I'm sure we could take the top spot by the end of the month. And again, Juneteenth around the corner, be a nice Juneteenth present.
Look at the Kansas City Royals. They stuffed the ballots and they're taking over baseball. So
exactly. So if it's good for the Royals, it's good for the Kings. Go to podcastland.com and vote for us for podcast of the month if you feel like it. Rate, review, and share the show with your friends. That's the most important thing. If you like it, don't keep it to yourself. You got to share it with everybody else. Again, shout out to everybody for downloading the show each and every weekend, and shout out to all the good response we had to our JTG interview last week.
Oh, yes, appreciate it.
Yeah, people seem to dig that, so you know, hopefully we'll have a chance to talk to JTG and others in the crazy world of professional wrestling down the road, and give him the Kings of Sport experience, and then get to the real deal with him. So, unless you got anything else, Marcus, unless you want to start scheduling other guests and podcasts and keep them in your book, because it's probably neater and more organized. We can call it a night.
That's all I got.
All right. So Marcus is going to get our itinerary straight again. If you do want to be a guest on the show, hit us up on email. Or if you can't hit Marcus up on Twitter, hit us up on email, a Gmail that we rarely use. But the kingsport@gmail.com is out there if you feel like feel like hitting us up there. So that's going to do it for this week. Yeah, check us out. Check out Pipe Bomb Radio and check out Review and Impact, home of the greatest contest right now in the internet markets. I don't know if you've been keeping up with this. The interracial duo contest.
I have, and nothing's going to beat, was it Scott Norton and,
Ice Train.
Ice Train. Oh.
Fire and Ice.
Man, what a tag team.
Oh, one of the great WCW tag teams. So, you got that to look forward to. So, if you haven't gotten sick of listening to me talk for 90 minutes on the Kings of Sport, you can check me out there. And, of course, you can always, bug Marcus on his Twitter and on Yahoo Sports. So his silence is a sign of complicitness.
It is. Come bug me.
Come bug him. So he's got free time now that the Stanley Cup Finals are over and the NBA Finals are over. What does Marcus got to do?
Baseball.
Baseball.
Just watch the Yankees win 2-1.
So. If you want to talk to Marcus about Yankees, hit him up. But yeah, we're going to talk baseball next week.
Yes.
And get to the bottom of this Royals thing. So for Marcus Vandenberg, I am the Godfather Nate Milton. Warriors, come out to play. That was a great movie, wasn't it?
Haven't seen it.
You never seen the Warriors? Oh, Marcus. It's a great movie. And a great remix video with the Flavor in Your Ear remix.
The bad boys, yeah.
Come out to play. So, anyway, for Marcus, I'm Nate, and you've been down with the game.
Warriors, come out.
Well, that's all for this week's edition of the Kings of Sport. Be sure to come back next week for an all-new episode. You can leave feedback for the show on Twitter at KOS_POD or via Gmail at thekingsofsport@gmail.com. Don't forget to like and rate us on iTunes and tell a friend. The Kings of Sport is a production of the Mosaic Podcast Network.
Whether you like it or not, he's back. D-A-double-D-Y, that's X. Attack like I just left.